not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route. Like I said, I was going to do this talk on January 11th, I believe it was. January 6th, those of you who have grown up in a Catholic or some, I think some Lutheran churches and other churches have the Feast of Epiphany or Three Kings Day. And that is January 6th, so I thought this is going to fit kind of right in after that. Some other churches, I believe it's Orthodox, some of the Orthodox are 10 or 12 days later. And remember the song, On the First Day of Christmas, My True Love Sent to Me, Gave to Me? That's the 12 days of Christmas. Well, the Feast of Epiphany or Three Kings Day is that 12th day. Oh, the 12th day after Christmas. So that's a little bit of about this. Let's start reading. I'll just read the first two verses. That's on the other slide. Slip it back one or to the beginning there. Verses 1 and 2. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." There's a lot in just those two verses. First of all, Matthew confirms where Jesus was born. Bethlehem, right? After Jesus' birth in Bethlehem. Okay, so he's born in Bethlehem during the time of Herod. Which Herod? Did you know there's more than one Herod? It was kind of a family dynasty thing. And this Herod was his grandfather was Herod Antipas, who was appointed governor of Idumea. And then his father, Antipater, was made the procurator of Judea. And this Herod ruled from 37 BC until 4 AD. And that 4 AD was verified by Josephus and some other secular writers, okay? So you get kind of a little time frame there. And if you remember the rest of the story past what I read, you know, Mary and Joseph, they take off to Egypt, and they're gone in Egypt for a while, and finally the Lord speaks to them with a dream and says, "Hey, it's okay to go back because that guy's dead." So that kind of fits right in here, that Herod died in 4 AD. And back to Bethlehem a little bit. That says Jesus was born in Bethlehem. I got thinking, how big a town was that? And how can I relate it to somebody around here? And it was between 600 and 700 people in that town. I looked on the local populations, and Alanson was about the closest. There's like 750-ish in Alanson. So that's probably the closest nearby town to a size that would relate to Bethlehem. So not a big town. And pretty close to Jerusalem, if you remember. It's like 5 miles south of Jerusalem. And the third point, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem asking ... Who are the Magi? We don't really know. That's all it says is Magi. And that term Magi was used a lot in especially the book of Daniel. How many of you like the book of Daniel? I like the book of Daniel. That's an interesting book. And what happened in that book of Daniel, if you recall, you know, when the northern kingdom was conquered and taken away by the Assyrians, and then the southern kingdom of Israel, when it was two kingdoms, were taken off to Babylon, and Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, or I can't remember the other names, Mishael, Azariah, and I know Daniel was Belteshazzar. They gave him a new name. These guys were Israelites who were taken off, and then they thought, "You guys are the smartest looking kids in the bunch. We'll train you with all the higher education we have to offer here in Babylon, so we'll teach you guys." Well, they did. But I think there was a lot of interchange because they were so smart and they were devout Jews. Remember that story about Daniel and the friends saying, oh, we're not going to eat the food you guys sacrificed to idols. We want to keep pure and we're going to eat just vegetables. We'll be vegetarians. We'll stay away from you guys. They separated themselves. And as it played out further in the book of Daniel, Daniel was able to interpret dreams. Remember that part? He was able to read. And so they valued these Israelite guys. And they plugged in to that, I would say, they plugged into that education system for these wise men and astrologers and all these guys that had different subtitles, but they were all part of that group. That term magi is where we get magic from, which didn't necessarily mean, you know, when I think of magic, I think, no thanks. But it was, they were studying the stars, they were studying all kinds of higher education. We'd call it a college or a university, probably. Well, anyway, that's the background of Babylon and Persia. How many of you are watching things about Iran these days? What's going on in Iran? We're kind of keeping track of that. That's the kingdom, the old kingdom of Persia. Oh, well, remember the when Saddam Hussein was on the warpath kind of thing there, and that was Iraq, Babylon. Babylon is in Iraq. Susa, which we talked about in Daniel, is in that's in the old Persian kingdom. So that's from that area, that general region is speculation. Again, we don't really know that, but that says from the east, from where the sun rises, is where these guys came from. And so putting two and two together, that's probably where they were from. Anywhere from 1,000 to 1,700 miles away. Boy, that's a trip. That's a trip. And it would take a long time to get there. And, you know, you figure out, oh, what would it take to get there? Well, I have to figure out how many miles it is and then what road am I going to take. And, you know, how many of you families have gone on trips like that? You know, you worry about, well, what is what I'm going to do? The only thing I could relate to personally was back in 1990. We were pregnant with our son, Stuart. And I had heard, I think it was probably Dr. Dobson's program or something on Christian radio about the Right to Life 90 rally that was happening in Washington, D.C. And, yeah, so what? Well, I don't know why, but God just really seemed to impress on me that, okay, that's fine and good to say you're pro-life and you support people treating babies in the womb as humans. That's fine. And well, I felt really called and burdened to put feet to that point of view and to plan. And we were poor. You guys know us. We grew up in this church and with our bunch of kids. We had four kids at the time and are pregnant with our fifth. And we didn't have any money. And it was like a crazy thought. You want to go to Washington, D.C. to a rally? What are you thinking? But I felt convicted that way. So, you know, we plan, save, put out savings, and plan our route. My wife did some calls through Right to Life, and we got connected with a family there in Germantown, Maryland, Doug and Debbie Dillon, and got connected with them. We never met them. So we drove over. I don't remember what vehicle I even was driving. Not the best vehicle, I'm sure, because it did break down out there, and I ended up putting a water pump in a parking lot, I think, out there. But we went and met Doug and Debbie Dillon, and they were so helpful. They were really inspiring. They were a young couple who had come to the Lord in, I won't elaborate, but very strange circumstances. Like, you came to the Lord like that? But they did, and they founded a church and had good. We had a great time with them. They had a couple of young kids, and we spent a couple nights with them. And then while we were out east, then we did some sightseeing after the rally. We went to the Assateague Island to see the wild horses and went to the Smithsonian Institute a little bit there, a little. Saw some of the major sites in Washington, D.C. But it was, like I said, it took a lot of planning. And to this day, I don't know why God was so adamant in my heart that, yes, you need to go. But I'm correlating that to these wise guys, to these wise men, and thinking, they weren't Jewish. That's part of the point, by the way, that they weren't Jewish. That this adoration of Christ, that the gospel is open to people who are not Jewish. Aren't you thankful for that? That's part of the point there, I think, of why Matthew included that in the story. But so we traveled to Washington like these guys traveled. And, you know, if it took, you know, in the book of Ezra, they took 4 months to get from where they were to Jerusalem. Maybe that's a pretty good guideline. 3 to 4 months it would take them to travel there. And now you think about the wise men, and you think about, there's a lot of church tradition surrounding these guys. How many wise men? Well, all the tradition is 3, right? Right? And the 3 are because probably the 3 gifts. We are not told how many wise men there were. The term magi is plural, so there was more than one. We know that, more than one. The Orthodox Church, their tradition is that there were 12. But most Catholic and other, some Protestant groups, more think of 3. So what the number was? It must not be important because we're not told, I guess. But the those that do have the 3 wise men, they've even given them names and told a little bit about them. And all this came out centuries after the event. How many of you, when I read that passage, the whole passage, it's hard not to think about Journey to Bethlehem. It's hard for me not to think about Journey to Bethlehem, right, Fred? We go back there. Your Majesty, King Herod, 3 magi from the eastern country of Persia, with questions I believe would be of interest to my lord. Magi, astrology, you say, what can men gaze at the star? Then you hear that, because I was a soldier many times, and I was one of the wise guys, too. Hard to, but it comes to the part where the soldiers introducing them. Gaspar, Balthazar, and Melchior, 3 magi from the eastern country of Persia. And those are the names, the traditional names that they come up with. And again, centuries after the event. Gaspar means treasure keeper from the Persian. And he's depicted as being African. And he brought the myrrh. Melchior means king of light in Hebrew, and he's depicted as being European, and he brought the gold. Balthazar means God saves his soul, or God will help, and he's depicted as Asian, and he brought frankincense. It's hard for me not to think about, were they being politically correct or trying to cover all the bases in coming up with these characters and these terms? And I don't mean to be offensive, but it seemed like they were trying to include everyone in who came. So the next bullet point I have under there is, where is the one born king of the Jews? And we saw his star when it rose. Two points there. Where's the king of the Jews? And we saw his star. You have a Numbers passage there to pull up. Numbers chapter 24, verse 17. This is, I forgot even who this was is speaking here, but I'll read it. I see him, not, this is Daniel, I think. I see him, but not now. I behold him, but not near. A star shall come forth from Jacob. I got nervous. I know who this guy was. This was not Daniel. How many remember Balaam? Balaam. Oh, talking donkey. That's the guy, Balaam. Well, this is a quote from Balaam. Balaam made seven prophecies while he was in Moab and with the Moabites. And this is number four, the fourth prophecy. And it's part of, just a part of it, an excerpt from it. But I see him now, I behold him not near. A star shall come forth from Jacob. A scepter shall rise from Israel. Oh, that may be where they got the idea of we're looking for a star, right? Checking out a star. These, and again, we're guessing, really, but the whole idea of they learned this from hundreds of years prior, or not hundreds, decades prior. Daniel, part of what, if you read the book of Daniel, part of what he was saying is the 70 weeks was a time frame of, so 70 years that they were to look for the Messiah after 70 years of captivity. So that set a time frame. Oh, we ought to be on the lookout. So this time frame kind of matches up. And this star thing kind of matches up. And they also use that term when they're looking. Where is the one born King of the Jews? Remember that's the title that that Pilate said, are you the King of the Jews? He asked him when he's interrogating right before he's crucified. And Jesus said, you have said so. That's in Matthew 15. In Matthew 27, when they crucified him, they put a sign on the cross. And what did it say? The charge against him. This is Jesus, the King of the Jews. King of the Jews. Well, Herod, you know, Herod, let's read verses 3, 4, and 5. Verses 3, 4, and 5. When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the people, people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them, where the Messiah was to be born? In Bethlehem, in Judea, they replied, for this is what the prophet has written. And do you have that Micah 5:2 on there too? I can't see the type on that. Yeah, you okay. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people, Israel. Herod was very worried about his kingdom overall. He killed one or two of his kids. He killed one of his wives because I don't want any threats. I'm going to cling to this kingdom. It's mine. So speaking of this is Sanctity of Life Sunday. Speaking of that, he killed his own kid and was threatened by the birth of Christ. That was a threat to him. And then he asked the rulers and the teachers where he's coming from. And they did this quote. It's kind of an interesting quote because that's a paraphrase. It's not word for word what it says back in Micah. And it's also got a little tag on the end that's, I found it in 2 Samuel 5:2. So if you read the Micah 5:2 passage, it said, but you, Bethlehem Ephrathah, though you are small, not the least among, well, though you are small among the clans of Judah, out of you will come for me one who will be ruler over Israel, whose origins are from of old, from ancient times. That passage of Samuel 5:2 says, they're talking about, that's when they were anointing King David as king. And remember, King David is, the promise to King David was there's not going to be a ruler, you'll never fail to have a ruler from your household, and that the Christ was going to be from your line. Remember that? Coming from David? In the past, while Saul was king over us, you were the one who led Israel on their military campaigns. And the Lord said to you, you will shepherd my people Israel, and you will become their ruler. So it wasn't just ruler, it was the shepherd. Aren't you thankful for that? That Christ is our shepherd. Verse 7. Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, go and search carefully for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him. So Herod had to know that time. Remember, he's kind of a paranoid guy, and I don't want anybody else coming up to take my throne. I'm watching out. And so he... important to find that time frame. How many of you are maybe a little bit annoyed, or you look at the classic crash or manger scene? You know, you always have the shepherds gathered around, and there's usually the wise men. The three wise men are there also, are they not? In the classic way you view the Christmas story, and Not very likely. Partly, when I was looking at Ananias and Sapphira, the talk I did in December, at the end of that passage it says, so they presented him in the temple. And they did the sacrifices for the firstborn and all that stuff. And after that, they went to Nazareth. And I said at that time, apparently there's some kind of a gap between that verse and the previous verse, because they didn't go right back to Nazareth. They did eventually go to Nazareth, but they didn't go at that time. And part of the reason I confidently say that is this passage we're reading today. That the wise guys showed up on the scene. You know, when they were doing those sacrifices, I mentioned that they offered the sacrifices of the very, very poor when they offered the sacrifices for Jesus' birth and being the firstborn son. And if they had gotten gold and frankincense and myrrh, they had a little cash reserve there, and they could have given a better offering. So you can kind of deduce that the wise guys hadn't showed up yet at the scene. And what was the years? I think maybe it's the next passage after where we left off. I'm reading this, but 2 years, you know, Herod had the kids killed in Bethlehem that were 2 years old and younger. So it sounds like maybe he put a little margin of error on there, but there was some amount of time up to 2 years old that this had happened. And it's curious to me that the wise men apparently did not know where to go. They assumed Jerusalem, the capital of Israel, would be where to go, and that they ought to know. These guys ought to know where the new king was. And so they asked the king, and he told them, you know. Verse 9. After they heard the king, they went on their way, and a star they had seen when it rose went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. I don't think this was a normal star. That's just me. I don't think it was normal. It sounds like when you read it, and again going to commentaries and other things, it sounds like the wise men saw the star. It was an event they observed, but it wasn't like Fred would say in the Journey to Bethlehem, we followed across the sky and it has led us here. It doesn't sound like that was the scene. They saw the star, they recognized the importance of it, and I don't think they were following the star on their way to Jerusalem. Now, that's speculation. It doesn't say one way or the other, really. But the commentaries I've read and stuff, that's the wording they think that happened. There were two main highways they probably traveled. There's one called the Royal Highway that goes from Susa to Sardis, way up in the north. And then from that one branches one called the King's Highway that goes down, and it's on the east side, the opposite side of the Jordan from where Jerusalem is, speculating that would be likely the route those guys would travel. And so I lost my train of thought. And Bethlehem is south of Jerusalem. Now, it's in the most stars you would see they would come up in the east like the sun does, and set in the west as you watch them with the Earth's rotation. That's the direction they would go, but this one led them south. I think it was a supernatural light, and they would call that a star, but that's what I believe. I believe it was a supernatural event that wasn't easily explained as a supernova or a conjunction of the planets and all these other secular explanations. Well, I'll leave that as it is. We'll go on to verse 11. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshiped him. They opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold and frankincense and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route, by another way. That term they used, for they came in and they saw the mother Mary and the child. That child is paedon, which means infant or toddler. Remember the story in Luke, the Greek word is brephos, which is specifically a tiny, tiny baby. So they use a different term here, a toddler or an older kid. That's one of the clues that this wasn't right at the time of Christ's birth. It was a while later. They bowed down, that Greek term, that's proskumo, and it's used only 9 times in the New Testament. And it means really bowing down. You see these pictures of in the Islamic culture in particular, people bowing way down and kissing the ground or touching their forehead to the ground. That's the posturing. Very humble, really getting down and worshiping. And the gifts. Gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Gold was a kingly gift, majesty, authority. Frankincense represented purity or deity. Godliness. And myrrh was kind of, people have the commentaries, that represented Christ's death. That was how they were anointed in death. So I come back to that question, what are you looking for? Our family, and I've said this several times, and I'm just going to say it again because it's so soon after the new year, our family likes to go and read the passage in Joshua, where they're getting ready to come into the promised land, and the Israelites, God tells Moses, have 12 guys, one from each tribe, grab a big rock in the middle of the river, because they're crossing on dry land, remember, it's like the Red Sea. They cross on dry land. He said, pick a guy from each tribe and have them grab a stone and put it on their shoulder, carry it to the other side. So they do that, and he says, okay, we're going to stack these up as an altar. And when your kids say, what in the world is that pile of rocks? You say, this is where God helped us get across the river. He made it be on dry land. Our family does, we read that story, and now we don't have kids in the house, so just my wife and I. But every year we sit back and try to review the past year and say, how have we seen God work in our family, in the people closest to us? How can we? And we write it down. It's really cool. I think this year we had 40-some points of ways we saw God move. And some of them we don't know the answer. We just recognize that this is a godly event, and how it's going to play out in the end, we don't know. But we see God working. We see God working. Some of it is we see God telling us, you need to do something. You have a job to do here. So how about you? How about you? Do you have ways that you are seeking God right now? this year, you know, people have been last couple of speakers have mentioned New Year's resolutions. That's one way of saying it, I suppose. God is calling me to give up or to do either one, something this year, but it could be a lot more than that. Is God calling you to step out in faith and do something really different? Is God calling you to ask, and what do you want me to do? Because maybe you're not even asking. You know, we're right in the middle. We mentioned it at the business meeting, and we didn't get there to the whole congregation. If you weren't at the business meeting last week, Kaylee presented that the pastor search committee have made a transition, and we've ended our relationship with P3, the hired entity. We had a great time with them. They taught us a lot of stuff, but we kind of got to the end of that relationship, parted on good company. We're doing fine with them, but it challenged us as a committee to, okay, now where do we go? How do we start out again? So we've come up with a pastor candidate packet. We've got more work to do, but you can look at that online on the church center. It's very at the very bottom of the page, a little bit to the right. There's a little button you could push, and you could see that document. And so we're looking. And, you know, as a team, we have our goals and things that we're looking for. But me as an individual, I have things I'm looking for, too. And in a pastor, I'm looking for a Bible teacher, someone who can exemplify worship. Shepherd is a big one with me. I want a pastor who's a shepherd of the flock. I want him to be able to relate well with others and inspire others. And that's kind of the short list. But that's for me. That's for me, my viewpoint of what we're looking for. What are you looking for in a pastor? What do we need to change as a church to find the right pastor, but to follow and change and grow and adapt to what a new pastor may ask of us, a vision a new pastor may have? Those are all things we need to look at. My son Stuart was here at the Christmas holidays, and we took him to Traverse City, and when we were on the road, I asked him, well, what did you like most about living in Germany? Because he was there in the military for several years. And he said, I liked where they took old relics and things from the big cathedrals. He said, one in particular, he said that this, several towns in the area were destroyed by the Allies during World War II. Beautiful big cathedrals and smaller churches. And every one of them was common. They had a big lectern kind of a thing was common in most of those churches, but they're all torn up. But they said they did a really nice job of taking pieces of several of these lecterns, and they had some craftsmen put them together and made a really cool lectern thing. It was a beautiful thing to look at, and I thought, that's a really cool thing to do. Another guy I listened to online, Doyle Dykes, he's got a guitar player's, the Sunday String Along, and I watch him every week. But he has a guitar that someone gave him that was made from the beams of one of these old churches in Germany. They took some of that wood and made the top of his guitar out of it. And it was like a 1,000-year-old tree when it was destroyed, and it was 400, the church was 400 years old when it was destroyed, so it goes way back, this tree does. And they incorporated that and made it something that was very relevant to today. That's what I'd like to see. That's my heart for a new pastor. Take what we are, what we have been, our history, and the things that we are like, and not just hold it, but to adapt it and to build it into something really relevant and really beautiful. That's my heart. So what's your heart? What's your heart? What's God calling you to do? What's God calling you to say or grow or seek? That was the other closing passage from Matthew also. Matthew 7, verses 7 and 8. Ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find, knock, and the door will be open to you. For whoever asks receives, and the one who seeks finds, and the one who knocks, to the one who knocks, the door will be open. Let's pray. Lord, I thank you for this group. Again, thank you for the people who are doing the Carricks, finishing up the guys up today. Guide us today as we go forward and seek to further your kingdom. Help each one of us to find ways that we can fit in and participate in your kingdom. In Jesus' name, amen.
Stand and join us. This is quite a long beginning, so
drought and storm, what heights of love.